You know, your lung capacity begins to decline by the time you turn 35, if I'm not mistaken. But luckily, there are some exercises you can do to improve lung function. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for spending some of your day with us here on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look today, right now, at lung and respiratory health. And our guest is Sarah Brundage. She's a registered respiratory therapist. She's director of quality and innovation for Encore Healthcare. It's a real pleasure to welcome her to the show today as we talk about a variety of things as it comes to our lungs. And I hope you'll join in with your questions. What questions do you have about respiratory health? Join in. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org. Sarah Brundage, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, Larry. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So I just said that lung capacity starts to diminish as we age. You get 35 and over, it starts going down. How does our lung capacity change as we age, or just why?
Sure. So just like with anything with our body, as we age, we kind of start to wrinkle, and the collagen and structure of our body also kind of starts to deteriorate. And our lungs are no different. We just can't see them. They're inside of our body, so we tend not to pay attention to them. And with everything else, that aging and that decline is pretty gradual for most people, unless you have a lung disease or something that exacerbates that.
Yeah. Do you know, is there a way to, I mean, it sort of happens gradually, I guess. How do you know, how can we tell that lung capacity is decreasing? I guess shortness of breath sooner than later.
Yeah, if you have just the natural lung decline, you probably really won't experience many symptoms until you're much further later in life. Maybe some shortness of breath, maybe just realizing when you walk up those stairs, it's a little bit tougher to catch your breath. But overall, most people don't even experience symptoms. Like I mentioned, if you do have an underlying lung disease, then you're more likely to experience symptoms.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if you're having a lot of trouble breathing or there's a lot of shortness of breath, should you be going in to see you or a physician or whatever?
Yeah, I highly recommend that you talk with your main provider, your PCP. If you are exhibiting any symptoms of shortness of breath that maybe wasn't there before, or if you're having prolonged cough or even excess mucus production, if our lungs are not happy, they like to lubricate and kind of create more gunk. So if you notice that you're coughing up some extra thick phlegm for a prolonged period, or you've got a cough that's hanging on for a long time, definitely make an appointment.
Yeah. Somebody wonders if your lung capacity decreases, is there a way to sort of get back some of the capacity you lost?
It depends on the condition that you have. So some medications can help decrease inflammation or irritation in your lungs, and then the symptoms might go away. There are a bunch of diseases, though, that are progressive, and as there is decline or deterioration in your lung tissue, some of your symptoms might hang on, and it'll gradually get worse, and that's where we go to just treating symptoms and trying to make people as comfortable as possible.
Yeah. What about exercise? You know, we just finished the last 45 minutes. We were talking about exercise. I do some every day, and some people do, and some people don't. What are there exercises that you can do to keep your lungs healthy as possible?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Overall, health and exercise is really, really important to your lungs. There are specific breathing exercises. If people have heard of belly breathing or diaphragmatic breathing, That can be super helpful if you are experiencing shortness of breath or you want to work on strengthening your respiratory muscles. Most people don't realize this, but your major respiratory muscles, your diaphragm, so that's in your lower chest cavity, that does a large amount of work for your breathing. But we even have muscles in our neck, in our upper chest, in our back that goes into our shoulders, and then throughout our ribs that help us breathe. And so if you try things like belly breathing, that can help strengthen those.
Yeah, and, you know, I've had to teach this or try and tell, you know, I teach a broadcast podcast classes and so forth, and we talk about breathing from the diaphragm, and it's always hard to kind of explain that to people. How do you explain it to somebody?
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons why it might be a little tricky, especially for women. Unfortunately, women have been taught to really breathe up in the upper half of their chest, in their shoulders, and keep their tummies nice and tight. So you'll see men tend to be natural belly breathers. Women tend to struggle with it. But belly breathing is, if you watch a professional singer, you'll see that their belly moves out rather than their shoulders moving up when they take a huge breath in. So I recommend the easiest way to do it is lay on your back, on your bed or your floor. Place your hands on your tummy and kind of open up your palms so that they're wide and just laying on your tummy. And then you're going to close your mouth. You're going to put the tongue on the roof of your mouth. And you're going to slowly breathe in through your nose and just make sure that your tummy is raising and your hands are raising on your tummy. Some people like to even put a book on their tummy so that they're focusing on raising that book as they take the nice deep breath in through their nose. And then you can exhale back out through your nose or through your mouth nice and slow if you want.
And that's a good way to learn. I've never done that in class. I could have had everybody just lay down on the floor. Yeah, it's a way
to do it.
Hopefully
they don't take a nap.
Nancy in Milwaukee, will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. I'm a 90-year-old Caucasian woman. And for over 45 years, I've had a very, very large hiatal hernia. And a thoracic surgeon told me a few years ago that this outer skin of the stomach that is up there where it does not belong has enmeshed in the outer layer of my lung, and that now there is no possibility of putting this hiatal hernia back down below the diaphragm where it belongs. So I'm wondering if, because it's leaning into the lower lobe of my left lung, I am wondering if you could suggest specific lung exercises which would increase my lung capacity.
Yeah, because I don't know your full medical history, I always recommend just having a really candid discussion with your providers about how you're feeling, especially your symptoms. But the belly breathing is really, really huge for you to do. There's also one called pursed-lipped breathing, and you pretty much start out doing the belly breathing that I described earlier, the nice slow breath in through your nose. But then you're going to purse your lips almost like you're going to kiss somebody, and you're just going to exhale out really nice and slow. That kind of helps you strengthen those muscles that want you to exhale pretty quickly, and that creates some resistance. So if you are able to, Google belly breathing and Google pursed lip breathing.
Yeah, I could see where that would. And how much would you do that? I mean, is there a length of time that you would do that for?
We recommend up to 10-ish minutes if you can. If you start to feel lightheaded, because sometimes you can hyperventilate a little bit if you're working pretty hard to breathe or you're breathing quickly while you're practicing. So just monitor yourself, make sure you're not feeling dizzy or lightheaded, and stop at any time if you feel any discomfort.
Nancy, good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Jim in Camp Douglas, we'll go to you. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Sarah. Say, your subject matter expert seems very knowledgeable. I could not resist calling in. So I just wanted to get some answers to it. I like to exercise in the winter with snowshoeing and walking and things like that, but I'm wondering what temperature should I avoid breathing in with some of that below zero weather? And if it it is harmful to the lungs, and if I should wear something to kind of protect my mouth and breathe in maybe a little warmer air. So I'll hang up and take your comments offline, and thank you very much.
Jim, good question. Thanks so much. What do you think, Sarah?
Yeah, get out there and snowshoe, but obviously monitor the temperature. Cold air is definitely an irritant for our lungs. Our lungs like to be warm and they like to be moist. So when you're breathing in that cold air, it can be quite a shock and actually be kind of painful. So I recommend wearing a scarf or like a face mask. You know, when you exhale, you can feel on the scarf, it starts to get wet. So that's humidity that your lungs like. So keeping that scarf on there will make sure that you're breathing in warmer, moister air. And the job of our nose and our mouth is to humidify and moisturize everything that we breathe in.
So these masks we've been using for COVID probably work too.
They could, definitely.
Sarah Brundage, our guest today, a registered respiratory therapist and director of quality and innovation for Encore Health, our guest. And she'll be with us right up until 12:30 today as we talk with her about your lung health. And I hope you'll join in. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back with Sarah right after this look at the news. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for being with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about keeping your lungs healthy and looking out for respiratory diseases and perhaps cancers with our guest, Sarah Brundage, a registered respiratory therapist and director of quality and innovation for Encore Healthcare. Really great to have her with us today. And you can join in with your own questions at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Quite a few emails and callers as well. So maybe we should take some calls. Larry in Dodgeville, we'll go to you first. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you. I'm 65 years old. I got fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, carpal tunnel. I'm going blind and deaf. And I wake up every night and my nose is all clogged up. I can hardly breathe. What can I do to avoid this?
All right. So Larry's dealing with a lot of issues and wakes up with a stuffed nose and wants to know, what can I do to make that change?
Yeah. There's a couple of things that can be kind of simple and helpful is making sure you're staying hydrated. The only way that our body can really thin out any sort of mucus that we produce is by staying hydrated. The other thing, it's pretty common to end up stuffed or having to clear phlegm every morning because our bodies are pretty stagnant at night as we sleep and things just kind of accumulate. When we're awake, we don't realize it, but we're swallowing a lot of phlegm. And so it just kind of collects when you're sleeping. So I recommend staying hydrated. It is normal to have a cough or a productive, you know, nose blow in the morning. But if it is really, really bothering you, please talk to your care provider. There are sometimes some medications that you can take, especially nasal sprays, that can help reduce some inflammation in your nose, and that can help reduce you producing that mucus.
Yeah, the nasal spray is a good idea. And talking to your provider. I just as an aside, when I'm up, get up in the morning, it's usually quite a bit cooler in the morning. And if I can get out, and I do get out for 2-3 miles in the morning for a jog, that seems to, if there were any problems, they go away in the cooler temperatures for some reason.
Yeah, temperature can be different for every person. We see patients come into the ER, whether it's really cold temperatures that's bothering their lungs, or maybe they have a lung disease, or really humid weather can actually trigger some lung disease exacerbations too.
Larry, thank you for calling. Maggie in Pine River, your turn. Hi, Maggie.
Hi. I'm a 71-year-old, female, I guess, as you know, and I have experienced since about August a restriction feeling in my chest. I went to the doctor and she, did the x-rays and the EKGs and echocardiogram. Everything checked out fine. My health history is negative for everything. I'm pretty boring that way. But it's a slight shift and it's different. It's something different for me. And I was wondering, we cook with a propane gas stove. I was wondering if maybe it's years of exposure to that, or what do you think of? I'm also looking at trying an air purifier to see if in the kitchen to see if that would help. I'm just looking. I just don't understand why all of a sudden I have this restriction.
So a restriction in breathing. What might be the problem? Obviously, you would need a look at Maggie, but
yeah, there's a lot of things that can cause a feeling of chest tightness. It can be related to your breathing. You know, there's diseases out there like asthma that have a feeling of chest tightness. You don't have to be wheezing or short of breath to have that. Anxiety can also produce that chest tightness. And then it's great that your provider looked into, the heart conditions, because there are a number of things that can cause pain or tightness in your chest related to the heart. There is a big concern about the quality of your indoor environment, and definitely gas and propane cooking can lead to some lung discomfort. And if it's a new thing that you've started to experience, I don't know if you've looked into allergy testing, because, we can develop allergies at any point in our life. And you can also get testing done inside your home for radon. I don't know if you've ever done that, but that, after long-term exposure, can lead to all sorts of things that you might want to get checked out.
Yeah, and this is actually the perfect time of year to be doing radon testing in a home, because it's enclosed. And mm-hmm. I know the builders I've had on my home on my show have often say, if you're going to do a one-time test, better to do a test over the course of a year. But if you're going to do a one-time test, this is the time of the year when the house is closed up a lot more than it would be in summer.
Yeah, radon is very common. It comes up from the ground. So we have exposure to it even when we're outside. But because, the outside is well ventilated, that doesn't have a real impact. What has the impact is, like you're saying, a closed off, well-sealed home. And radon is kind of sporadic. So your home can have radon issues while the home next to you does not. So it is important for homes to get regularly tested, and there are mitigation systems to help with that if you do find that it's positive. And there's a short-term and a long-term test. A short-term radon test is typically testing the air within your home on the lowest level of your home for about 3 weeks. It's great, but it's not the best. Larry, like you described, having that longer 3 month to a year testing period where the kit collects all of that information is really important.
Maggie, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Joel in Plainfield next. Hi, Joel.
Hello, Larry.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I'm 58 years old, and on December 28th, I had what they called, pneumonia. They weren't sure if it was pneumonia or COPD, but I ended up, they had to put me on a ventilator. They put me in a coma and then on a ventilator.
Yeah.
I was in the hospital for like 6 days, and now I'm getting better, but now they set me up with a pulmonary test in the middle of February. But I was wondering if there are any exercises I can do to try to improve my breathing. Because right now I have a thing that measures my oxygen, and it says 95 all the time. So they say that's all right.
Okay. What do you think, Sarah?
Yeah, well, I'm very sorry that you had that experience. It's really great that you're going in and getting a lung function test done. COPD is really getting a definitive diagnosis of that is only done through those lung function tests. So that'll be exciting for you to hear what's happening there. But overall, just keeping yourself active is super important, not being stagnant, trying not to sit all day or lay in bed if you're not feeling great. It is really important for our diaphragm and our lungs to get moving. So any exercise is great. But again, look into belly breathing or that pursed lip breathing. Those are very two easy things that you can do, and you can do them anywhere.
And just talking a bit more about COPD, how's that different from asthma?
So COPD and asthma are both a part of a group of lung diseases called obstructive lung diseases. Historically, that means that you have issues getting air out. So the air gets kind of trapped into your lungs. Something is blocking the air from moving in and out really well. Asthma tends to have an earlier age of onset. So you can be born with it, or it can kind of develop and show up in younger years, and you can have it your whole life. COPD tends to develop later in life, and that's largely because it's due to exposure to different things, whether you're a smoker, you had exposure to second and third hand smoke, exposure to different irritants in your home or in your workplace. And there is a small group of people with COPD that have it due to genetics. It's called antitrypsin deficiency. And the thing with COPD is once it starts and you have an exacerbation, it's progressive. And so you'll never kind of regain that lung function again. So it's really, really important that if you do get a COPD diagnosis, you take your medications and you do everything that you can to not get lung infections like the flu or pneumonia or COVID.
And speaking of COVID, what's the new research on how COVID relates to lung and respiratory health?
Yeah, so pretty much every patient who has COVID ends up with respiratory symptoms and respiratory disease processes. And, you know, COVID then can affect all sorts of different systems within our body. But the lasting effects are shown to be in our lungs because our lung tissue is very fragile. And then we've also seen a huge amount of people who have lasting heart muscle issues. So inflammation and irritation in their heart muscle. The lungs and the heart are very, very closely tied together. And we're seeing COVID long haulers, if you will, for most patients.
Yeah, so get vaccinated if you haven't been vaccinated. If you don't.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, vaccination is very important. Carlene and Ripon, thank you for calling. What's on your mind? Carlene, are you there? Oh, guess we must have lost her. She has a question about dryness in her nose. I imagine that's something that comes up this time of year.
Absolutely, especially since people, you know, have their furnaces on and the ventilation systems going in their homes. The air is a lot drier. So we recommend that patients, you can humidify your home if you want, but you just want to be cautious with that. If you don't change out the water in your humidifiers really regularly and clean them, you could be introducing mold into the air, which can cause more irritation. But looking into those nasal sprays like Flonase that has a steroid in it that decreases inflammation and irritation. And then also you can buy like the saline from over the counter at your pharmacy that you can just spray up into your nose, and that helps keep things moist.
That's quite a few emails here. We should get to some of those. Mac in Dunn County wondered if, Mac says they're currently reading James Nestor's book called Breathe or Breath. If you're wondering if you're familiar with it, and Nestor covers a number of topics, especially with respect to his view that nose breathing is critical to health. Is in your mind, is nose breathing critical to health?
I think it's great. It's not critical. I have not read the book Breathe, but I did see it highlighted on a show recently. There's a lot of conditions out there that can make breathing through your nose really difficult. The structure in our sinuses and our upper airway in general can be different for everybody. And if you've got deviated septum or other things that cause issues, you're going to be a natural mouth breather. And that's okay. If you start to experience that you're feeling short of breath, though, even if you are a mouth breather, then definitely talk to your provider, because then you might have some other issues if you've got, you know, tonsils or other things in your upper airway that might be affecting your breathing.
Take a call from Janet in Madison. Hi, Janet.
Hi. As long as we're talking about breathing through the nose, I'm just curious if your guest can explain why our nose runs when we go outside in the cold, like even if I'm not really exercising. Thank you. I'll take the answer off the air.
Thanks, Janet. Good question.
Yeah. I'm one of those people who gets out in the cold and my nose instantly starts to run and I have sniffles. That all has to do with our sinuses and our nose are lined with blood vessels really closely to the surface. And part of that is to help humidify and warm up the air that's coming through. So in the winter in particular, when it's really, really cold, the cold air is going to hit those. And we've got some nerve endings there. It's going to hit those and irritate those. And our body, whenever it doesn't like something, it wants to lubricate it. So instantly, our sinuses and nose start producing more mucus.
That's how it works, Janet. Thanks a lot for that call. Betty in Dubuque, Iowa, emailed us. They have Betty has IPF. Any suggestions for specific lung exercises that might work for someone with IPF? And I'm not sure. What is IPF? Do you know the long term, the words for IPF?
Yes, IPF is idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. So idiopathic means they don't really quite know the cause. Pulmonary, obviously lungs, and fibrosis means scarring. So idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis can be triggered by, again, exposure to all kinds of different things, but it can also be triggered by like a virus or bacterial infection that maybe you had in your lungs. Ultimately, it's your body kicking into overdrive, wanting to repair things a little bit more than what they need, and it causes scarring. So then that causes issues with gas exchange. When you're breathing, you can't get in as much oxygen, and then you also can't breathe out CO2 or carbon dioxide as well. With IPF, I think it's just you want to have an overall comprehensive health plan, making sure you're eating right, and just getting out and exercising as much as you can. If you're really feeling strained or strenuous when you're exercising, dial it back a little bit. Talk to your provider about your symptoms, because that's one thing with IPF is it is progressive, and you can't ever quite get back to your normal behaviors and activity.
Jessica emailed. She's not aware of having any lung disease, but recently she's noticed that when something makes her laugh really hard, it causes spells of coughing. Should she be concerned? Could it be related to post-nasal drip from allergies? She wonders.
Yeah, so laughing, actually, we talked to our asthmatics about laughing can trigger an asthma attack. Same with how exercise can. So laughing, you're breathing in and out really fast. You're bringing in that air a little bit quicker than what our mouth and nose can humidify and heat it. So if it is a little bit cooler and you're moving it quickly through your lungs, it can irritate your lungs a little bit, and that'll trigger a cough.
Laura in North Woods, your turn. Thank you for joining us. What's on your mind?
Hi. I've had a problem for about the last 6 months or so where when I'm sleeping, I wake up and my mouth is so dry that it almost makes me wonder if I have some kind of vitamin deficiency or something or other. I mean, it's so dry that it feels like a desert in there. And I've never had that before. And I was just wondering if that's related to anything that I should investigate.
You are a mouth breather. So you're taking in the air through your mouth rather than so much your nose. That's pretty common when we sleep because everything relaxes when we go to sleep. And so that includes your jaw. So your jaw starts to hang open. And that's your mouth is going to be the path of least resistance for when you're breathing in. You know, if you can, maybe humidify the air. If you're noticing, though, that you're waking up tired and or if somebody has observed you snoring or you startle yourself awake frequently in the middle of the night, talk to your provider about sleep apnea possibility.
Yeah, you could take that sleep apnea test and maybe get some resolution or at least know whether or not you have that condition, Laura. So worth it, too. Thanks for calling. Good luck. Rick in Grafton has a paralyzed diaphragm on his left-hand side. He's wondering about the risks and benefits of plication surgery for his diaphragm. He's 61, has an autoimmune disease called MCD.
Well, I'm not fully sure of your whole medical history or what fully led, if the MCD led to the diaphragmatic paralysis. That's definitely kind of a serious thing just because our diaphragm does do 80%+ of the work for our breathing. I recommend talking to your provider about it. There might be some stimulation treatments that they can do, but I'm not fully aware of your whole history, so I don't want to make any recommendations.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Encore Healthcare, you're Director of Quality and Innovation. What are you doing for that in our last minute?
Yeah, I am. It's a wonderful home care, telerespiratory, and software company. So our mission is to bring quality healthcare and education to patients in their home and making sure that they get the correct treatments that they need. So we monitor them and go back to their providers and make recommendations if they maybe need some more help.
So that's pretty cool. So it's done online?
Most of it, mm-hmm, if you're part of the telerespiratory program. Yep.
Well, I tell you what, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I've got a whole bunch of questions here written down that I haven't asked about. So I'm hoping you'll agree to come back and be with us sometime, Sarah.
Oh, absolutely. I would love it.
Well, it was great having you with us, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Larry.
Sarah Brundage, our guest today. She is a registered respiratory therapist and director of quality and innovation for Encore Healthcare. And I imagine you type in Encore Healthcare, you're going to find that pretty quickly in a search engine. So great to have her with us, and hopefully we can get her back for another visit. Just a look ahead to tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show. It's Wednesday, so that means we deal with the outdoors and the environment, and we're going to visit the Eagles in Sauk City and Prairie du Sac on Wednesday's show. And then we'll take a tour of our night skies and get some tips on how to take pictures of stars and other celestial bodies. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.